Now, and set it to your mic.
Okay. Does that sound different now?
Whoa, you sound so much better. That was night and day. How much better?
Oh, I'm Johnny Professional.
I've done this like 3 weeks now.
Welcome to the Launchpad Face Show. I'm Aaron. That's my favorite fuck up when we say we're the wrong person, because it doesn't matter how long you've been podcasting. I've been me my whole life. But when you fuck that up.
Right. Matt, it's been too long. Dude, since the last time we recorded, Godzilla has won an Oscar. Dune 2 came out and was mid. Like, I got
new shoes.
You got new shoes? We got a lot to talk about, man.
Is this it? Or is this a preamble, or are we recording this?
We're recording. I hit record. You heard the lady say, recording in progress. And we were like,
I'm recording now too.
Great. Let's do this. Guys, let us know. Hit us up. Follow, like, subscribe, all that good shit. Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, at Launchpad Pod, and our website, launchpadpod.com. It's going to be a good one, guys, because we're flying off the cuff. Matt's feeling like shit. I'm ready to rock. Let's do this.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to Launchpad Podcast. I'm Aaron.
Just so you know, I do feel like shit, but that joke, I just did that on the fly. I haven't been thinking about that for the last 2 minutes. No, I'm Aaron's friend, Matt. I knew it would come to me.
Dude, it's crazy. So I'm not in my house, as everybody can see who's watching the YouTube. I'm in a drab gray hotel room.
You're in an interrogation room.
To sneak all this shit into my ass was really difficult, man. This podcasting equipment up my butt.
Our 200 fans appreciate it, though.
I had to hold this watch in my ass. That was my Christopher Walken impression, for those of you who are keeping track of shit.
Yeah, you didn't make it to that Super Bowl commercial for some reason. They were like, nope, we have enough. Thank you. Thanks for applying for the commercial.
He was in Dune 2. I don't think he knew he was in Dune 2. did you see Dune, Matt? Did you watch Dune 1 at least?
I didn't even see the original Dune. I've tried to. I've seen the first 20 minutes, I can tell you what happens after that.
When you say the original, do you mean the Cronenberg one? Or, So, rough. I take it you didn't read the book in high school. You weren't a young Paul Maudim fan. I read in high school, huge fan of Dune, the first book. I read the first six books. Dune 1 is a great book. Dune 2, pretty good book. After that, they start getting real weird. Real weird. So I don't know where they're going with this film franchise. I watched Dune 2. I went and saw it in Boston, right next to Emerson. The Boston Commons Theater right there.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine.
Yeah, okay.
It was a movie that was viewed the way I tell people about movies. So Dune 2 was like, hey, I'm Timmy Chalamet. My dad died. Now I'm going to become this messiah. Oh, man, fucking cool. Then I'm going to drink this blue shit. Then I'm going to ride this fucking worm. Then explosion. I'm going to fight this guy. I'm going to kick his ass. I'm going to be a messiah. I'm going to start a jihad. Like, the excitement that I have to tell you about a movie as fast as possible was the way that movie was made.
Do you think it was better off that way, or you think it suffered for that?
Oh, it had no plot. It was like, hey, we have like 9 million things we have to figure out in a 3-hour movie, and it's still not enough fucking time. That movie did not have enough time for its own good. And it's like, it gets to a point where you're like, just make a series or do something, because you could not figure out how to deliver all the plot points you wanted to make. You still skipped over a whole bunch of plot points that you were supposed to make. It was really good. It was really well done. It was well acted. But at the end of the day, you're just kind of like, was that a plot? Or was that just you telling me about a book that you read that you
narrative
really
things happened?
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, then this happened. Then you had to drink this blue shit. Like, it totally loses all the emphasis when you just have to rush through it that hard, but still visually perfect. The effects perfect. So I'm on board.
Isn't it funny? I can't think of an example recently, but I've watched movies where there was acting. I guess you're right.
right. Plot is the best way to say it. There was acting. There were scenes. There is a crescendo of story, I'll say, because sometimes it's not character development and it's not satisfying, but there is a beginning and a middle and an end. And it does make sense as a story, but it doesn't sound like you showed me a story or told me a story or showed me a movie. It just feels like a list of things that happen in chronological order. Like, we've all seen movies where it's just a fucking mess. But yeah, like, you like where you're like, wait, does that have anything to do with this past scene? And you're like, well, why would you show me that character saying that? Because I don't know who they are. I don't even mean that. I mean, like, everything makes enough sense. But you're, it's almost like when someone tells you a story and they finish and you're like, why did you tell me that? Like, yeah, did like, it wasn't super exciting. It wasn't funny. It wasn't tragic. I can't relate to it. It's not something that you and I have an inside joke about. Like, literally, why did you tell me that story? You just told me something that happened. Some movies are like that. They're like, we just wanted you to know that this guy went on a road trip. And you're like, but like, what happened on the road trip? Like, hey, he stopped and he got some stuff and then he continued the road trip. And you're like, but like, was it the stuff that he got? Was it like weird or special? Or they're like, no, it was just regular road trip stuff. And you're like, okay, fair.
On the plane ride, I watched the latest Wes Anderson film, and he does that on purpose. Like,
correct.
But while he does it, he's like, yeah, but it's super fun and quirky. And you're like, I'll give you that. All right, I'm on board.
And well, he's an interesting, because he's an auteur in terms of like the way he tells a story. You know, a Wes Anderson movie, right? I have my favorites and I have my least favorites, but you know that they're his. And I always equate that to like telling jokes. I have friends that tell good jokes, but every once in a while, their jokes aren't that funny, but I still like listening to them because they're good at that. Same as storytelling, right? That's exactly, I guess, what we're saying.
I can't say I'm a Wes Anderson fan, but I really liked Asteroid City. It was just the right level of quirky. I'm watching it. The stewardess passing her cart tray, you know, pushing it down the aisle of an airplane is like, do you like that movie? And I'm like, what? That movie you're watching right now, do you like it? And I was like, this is getting aggressive. And she's like, because I watched it, I don't understand it at all. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, it's absurd and very silly, and like it's an absurdist thing. It's silly on purpose to do weird things, and you know, they're playing with storytelling. I'm here for it, you know. And she's like, I just don't get it. And I'm like, no, you probably did. It just isn't your bag. There's nothing to get.
Right. Yeah.
You like people saying very funny, very weird and quirky things as dry as possible? No. Oh, well, this isn't for you then. That's all there is to it. It's like Napoleon Dynamite. No, it is your bag or it isn't.
Right. But it's funny though, because you're right. Napoleon Dynamite is a great example, because it feels like there's something to get there or miss. And like, I, for one, miss it. I don't understand Napoleon Dynamite as much. Like, it's funny. I think it would be a great, funny television episode or a skit. It's not a good movie. Like, it was not a sustainable movie, in my opinion. But like, I do feel like I missed something, but it's that's not what it is. That's not how it goes, right?
No, that's literally you're just catching up to a joke that's never told. But that's how Dune that's how Dune was like the whole time. It's just like the whole time is just trying to figure out how to tell this story. And there's this big important moment. Paul Atreides is supposed to be the Messiah, right? He's supposed to be the Matrix. He's the one.
Mm-hmm.
The prophecy says, well, if you're really the one, you got to drink this worm shit. It's blue and only women can drink it and survive. And it is a painful, painful process. And it makes you trip balls. You can see through time and shit. But any man who has done it died. But if you're really the Kwisatz Haderach, if you're really Paul Maudib, if you're the one, you'll survive. And he's like, I better do this. He does not earn that scene at all. He just shows up like, yo, give me some of that chug, blah, 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 blah.
Hey, we told the audience I was the one.
Yeah. Like it was one of those things. It's like one of the most important life-changing moments of his life. And he's just like, well, got to do it because we got 15 minutes. We better hurry up. Give me that shit. chug, like freaks out. Everybody's like, oh, is he going to live? And he's like, bing, of course I'm going to live. I'm the fucking Kwisatz Haderach, bitch. And jumps up and takes off to fucking start a jihad. It is so glossed over. And I'm like, that's one of the most important moments of your life. No one has survived this. But I know that if I'm going to go on this journey that I don't even know if I believe myself, I'm going to have to drink this blue shit and it could kill me. But I think I'm strong enough because my mom's been preparing me my entire life to be this dude. And I'm like, you just glossed over such a cool thing from the book. And just like, hurry up, chug it down, drink up, pledge, go.
Well, that's the other thing is you're talking about a book that has a, you know, a cult or a following.
Big
the book
cult.
Is arguably much dense, more and more dense and thicker than the movie. you gotta cut and paste, and you gotta put what you want in that movie. And you always, you know, there's a reason we always usually say the book is better, because you can explain more, you can have inner monologues a lot easier than you can on the screen. It is a lot easier and more seamless exposition revealing in a book, you know, most books. My dad and I are actually in a big time version of that. Have you been checking out Hulu's new Shogun?
No, but I hear great things about it.
I don't know how many times I told you about that when we lived together, but that's like me and my dad's bar none favorite book. And it's like over 1,000 pages of Japanese feudal Japan history and samurai. And once you get into it, it's fucking baller. And it's one of those books that like my dad and I will start talking about it. Within a week, we both are rereading it because we cannot. There was a miniseries in the 80s that was really good, but it also was that thing of like a Stephen King book where you're like, you have cut out entire chunks of this that I would have said were necessary. And now that, you know, I've been in production and worked in movies and I'm a grown up, I also understand you can't put everything, but as something like that, what, you know, and I'm like this with comics and comic movies and comic shows where you're like, Spider-Man means something to me. Like, I, you know, I feel stupid saying that, but I also own the shit out of it. Spider-Man means something to me. Fantastic Four, I don't care about, so do whatever. But when you do something, well, it's true though, right? We all have our guys and our first families that we care about.
You can take a dump on Ben Grimm's big rocky orange chest. I don't give a fuck.
It wouldn't, you know what I mean? I would know if it was right or wrong. I could tell you if it was a good story point or a good transition away from comic material. But like Spider-Man has made me cry before. You know what I mean? Like I literally.
I've seen it. You can say hi to MJ for me.
Yes. And it's, you know, and I like meet you. And here's a throwback to our, it's got to be one of our absolute favorite things we've ever done for the podcast. But hanging out in Zeb Wells with his, in his creepy garage, writer Zeb Well, who's now like the head writer of all Spider-Man books at the moment. We were talking to him and he said, Spider-Man is the superhero I aspire to be like. I want to be, I live to be up like, and that just makes so much sense to me. So, but anyway, you think that, and it's like, there's ways to do that when you're telling me a Spider-Man story in a different medium. I know if it's different than the original source material or the last time or whatever. Shogun is like that for me and my dad. And the new movie is good. I really, really like it. It's from a production point. It's not a movie, it's a TV series, but from a production standpoint, it's so interesting to watch because the last one that they did was from the 80s. Now, like, think of what an 80s miniseries would look and feel like versus what a current miniseries looks and feel like, right?
Was the 80s one full of white guys in brown face?
No, they had some Asian dudes.
Did they have tape pulling their eye? Like that's
it wasn't that okay. Bad. And if I remember, I'd have to look at like actual numbers, but the 80s one, it had a budget. It felt real. It felt good. There was like castles and stuff. But like you're seeing epic wide shots in this because you can digitally enhance and stuff. Yeah. You don't have that. You don't have that breadth of storytelling. There's a bit, you know, the movie opens with a huge scene at sea in an old sailing vessel. The way you do that in the 80s is so different on a budgetary scale. I'm not even talking about the effects and the technological tools. But to tie it back to Dune, my dad and I know that book inside and out. And they're introducing a character and they're like, this is this guy's nephew. And you're like, yes, but that is not why he is important. He also has this history of X and Y and Z. And it's almost like me and my dad watching this, and maybe you felt similar in Dune. You know when they're, like you said, glossing over something or maybe not yet explaining something, or they have to, for the sake of time, condense something. And you're like, does this hit the same note with someone watching who hasn't read it? Do they understand the severity of this scene, not having the backstory of these characters that my dad and I do because we read this book 1,000 times? You know what I mean?
And it's interesting.
Like, it's really like, I honestly, like, you haven't read Shogun, right? If you and I watch this show together, are we literally seeing a different show?
Right.
And I honestly think we are. And I think it's working on those levels. I think when you see a scene like that, my dad and I are both like, oh man, that was such a good scene, because we know those two guys have a history. But you didn't know that because you didn't read it. You're just picking up what's in the show, you know?
Talking about Dune with people, they're like, I think I liked it, but I kind of want to read the book to find out. And I'm like, I don't know if you do. It is like, it makes Game of Thrones look like some kindergarten Golden Book shit. Because it is like, it's a metaphor for politics in the Middle East. So, to say.
Weren't ready for that, were you?
Yeah, complicated at best. It also gets super weird by the fifth book when his son turns into a giant worm monster god and, like, takes over the universe. So
it always does.
It always happens like that, right? So, yeah, it's very interesting. You're right. People who haven't read the book are kind of like, did I miss something? Maybe I missed something. I'm like, I don't think you missed anything, but I also don't think the movie did a good job explaining it. So, like, here I am being like, do I need more Dune? Do I need a miniseries now that goes even more into it? But I'm like, no, because the at the end of the day, the book has huge chunks of boring shit in it.
Yeah.
So I don't think I need more Dune. I just think maybe if you had split it up a little bit more, or like paste it or cut some shit out, where you're just like, here we go, this is what it is.
Is this it, or are they making another one?
It seems like they're making another one. This was supposed to be it, but the end of the movie, they're like, let's go jihad some shit, fuck it up. And they all run out of the room and you're like, what?
Does it end though? Because like the first one ended knowing there was going to be a sequel, right?
Yeah, big old wink. Yeah, I guess.
So this one could end. Like, you know, like when I saw Matrix 2, I did expect it to end. And I was like, oh, I didn't expect it to not end, I should say. And when Matrix 2 ended, I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, you have a third movie. And I don't know that I'd seen that at the time, at least not something so big.
This ends this story. But then just like I said, as quick as possible is like, on to the next one, motherfuckers. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize we were doing that. You brought up something, and I want to bring this up because it's a fun topic to always bring up. Everybody always has one answer, a movie that's better than the book.
My dad's go-to, and I think we talked about this on our very first interview, was Jaws. My dad says that, and it's kind of hard because the book is so different than the movie. It's almost like two different. Go ahead.
The book is not about a shark. It's about a dick.
And I think that's accurate. I think that's accurate. Book is good, but it's not. The movie is fucking groundbreaking. Like, you know what I mean? It literally is on multiple levels and multiple things.
Understood the assignment because it. I don't know how. I mean, Carl Gottlieb, honestly. Carl Gottlieb, it is a testament to what a good writer he is. He took the book, said, yeah, I read the book. It's about guys in a boat fighting a shark. And he somehow reworked the human thing and got rid of all the human aspects from the book. He doesn't take their plot line. He said, I don't know how to tell that in this hour that I have. So I'm going to tell a new story about these guys. And what I find interesting about it in the same framework as three dudes on a boat fighting a shark. And that is brilliant because most people don't pull that off. I don't even know if Peter Benchley is like, I if you secretly asked him like, hey, they basically threw your book in the trash, took three guys on a boat with a shark.
The title and the cover.
Yeah.
Right.
And did something with it. How do you feel about that? Because like Stephen King, again, I will argue, and I know you disagree, that The Shining, the movie, is better than the book.
Don't disagree. I was going to say that as my other poll.
And Stephen King doesn't like it. But at the end of the day, he made that palpable. Whereas the book isn't filmable in the same way. We saw them try and do it again. The TV version isn't a bad version. It's closer to the book, but I think it shows if you made that more magical, more mystical, more ghost story, is it as powerful and as good as the original Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah. And I would say if you can only have one Shining, the book or the Kubrick movie, it's the Kubrick. Like, you don't need, I mean, sadly, I don't also need the book. The book is good. And if you haven't seen the movie, the book is great.
Yeah.
But and like, that's one of those things I'll never know. I'll never know what happened if I didn't break up with what's her name. I'll never know how I would feel about The Shining novel if that was my first exposure as opposed to the movie, right?
Here's another one with Jack Nicholson. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Interesting.
Have you ever read the book?
I did, I think, in college.
The
Interesting.
Book. Here's the wild thing, though. I don't think the movie's better than the book. The movie is palpable. If you made the movie the book is, it's a wild movie. So for those of you who don't know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, it's Jack Nicholson in a sanitarium, an insane asylum, but he may or may not be completely sane and just there for the fucking Joker kicks of it. But while he's there, he sees that this woman, Nurse Ratched, abuses these other men. He says, you don't need to be beaten down. You just need to live life a little bit. And he shows them ways to have some camaraderie and have some life. And it doesn't go well. He gets beaten down by the system. It's a beautiful film. It's an incredible film. Brad Dourif, Chucky himself, is in it. It's fantastic. But there's a famous character in it, and it's this silent Native American who is a character in the movie. The book is from his perspective, a silent character. And multiple times through the book, he's like, the room freezes and it fills with gas. The walls open up and robots come out, start tinkering with people's brains. Imagine that movie. We did not get that movie.
That's more of a Terry Gilliam approach, kind of, right?
That's the movie I would love to see. But at the end of the day, when I first saw the movie first and then read the book later, I was like, damn, this movie is a perfect cross-section of humanity. I think it's so touching, so human, so good. But then you read the book and you're like, fuck, that's cool, too. I think they're both perfect companions, but it's one of those ones where the movie, I understand why they did it and they did it right.
Mm. Before we go too far away from Jaws, a quick aside, and it's an aside, but it's pulling it back to the intro that I didn't record. For Valentine's Day, Amanda and I usually give each other presents.
Yeah.
But she said the other day, she was like, I got this thing for you. And we always give each other presents like this. If you don't like it, no hard feelings, you know, tell me and return it. They'll give you the credit or you could pick your own thing out. She gave me these boat shoes because her family has a house in Rhode Island and they just bought a little boat. So she gave me boat shoes, which is like not my thing, but they're like apparently a very famous boat shoe company and they have a Jaws license. So they have like a dozen different designs of Jaws shoes. Some of them are very subtle. Some of them are for sure Jaws. So the ones she got me were white and they were lace ups. And on one side, one foot, the toe was like if you look at the shoe pointing toe down, the tip of the foot was Jaws coming out of the water. And the other one was what looked like a bunch of people trying to fix a catamaran type boat from the second one. And when I looked it up, lo and behold, it was Jaws 2. Find out they had this license for 10 years already and they released two different sets of these shoes. So I'm like looking through and as much as I like the ones that she got me, there was a pair that I liked even more. And I was like, would you be offended if I swapped them out? No. So I was like trying to find this. And obviously the one I wanted was like one of the best ones, which was one of the most rare ones.
So
lo and behold. Yep. But lo and behold, I got the one that I wanted.
Oh,
how cool is that?
Matt is
so if you guys aren't watching on our YouTube, which you should be,
he's
the
holding
two
up these
shoes I have.
Shoes, yeah.
And they're like loafers.
They're loafers, slip-ons, no laces. And when you put them side by side, it is the Jaws poster. It's the Jaws coming up to the, it's the shark coming up to
so
the
So on
swim.
My right foot is Jaws sideways leaning to, it's the poster coming to my left foot. And on my left foot is, what was the name? Chrissy?
Yeah.
Swimming. Theoretically, it's Chrissy, but the girl swimming on the poster. So
I've
worn these shoes twice, once to school, and everybody friggin' loves them.
I love how Chrissy swimming bisects the shoe perfectly, like the ocean and the sky.
Yeah. They're designed well. Oh, and then on the inside, it's hard to see it on the YouTube, but on the inside, it's supposed to look like a bloody interior. And there's a shoe that has that, and the box comes with tissue paper that looks all bloody.
Ooh.
So it's pretty cool. And I thought it was a really awesome gift that it was like something she likes, which is like Rhode Island, and something I like, which is Jaws. So what did I get her? I got her a graphic novel about Taylor Swift.
Aww.
Right? That's Swiftie. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That kind of hits the same notes.
My wife told me, she's like, your 7-year-old niece is getting into graphic novels. I'm like, which ones? And she's like, don't get too excited.
You just jumped on her like a vulture. This little girl just wanted to read a book.
She's like, none of them you ever heard of. You know, it's young adult, you know, dragon novels or whatever. So I'm like excited about that. But still, that's super cool. Excited to see kids getting into comic books. I talked about our last episode because my wife, whenever we buy presents for each other, we can't keep them to the day. And she's like, you have to open it now. She got me the Ecto-1 Lego set, which is a massive, like 18-inch car. And I've been putting together a little bit every day at work, and it is so fun. I haven't done Legos in a long time.
Oh, man, you're missing out.
It's so fun. It's so relaxing, too, because I don't think about work. All I think of, where's the little two-piece? Where the fuck is this two? I need a little two little numbers. Where is this two little two-piece? And you find it and you put it together. And like now I have a car and it has like a steering wheel and it turns and the wheels turn. And like I'm building it's and I got the doors on now. It's so exciting. It's so fun to see it come together.
I just did the Lego snow speeder from a couple of years ago. It's the collector's edition one. You could see, if you're looking on my YouTube, you could see it in the back.
I love how it's tilted sideways. It's a good stand.
Yeah, the stand, it's a good stand. Sometimes their stands I wish were a little bit more easy to manipulate, but this one's good. And like I do with all my Lego ships, Star Wars ships, I changed the intended color to this navy blue and gold, which is my color if I was a rebel pilot. So I'm still customizing it for that. I took all the orange off of the traditional snowspeeder, and now it's navy blue with a couple gold highlights. And I have some extra pieces that I may interchange too. I did that with my Y-wing, which I fucking love, and my X-wing as well.
So I have a whole fleet of these Star Wars vehicles that have my own Rebel insignias and colors on them.
Look at you, you big nerd. I love it.
Girls go crazy. That's why girls buy me shoes, man. They're like,
yeah. Kay was like, she's like, well, when you're done with that, you know, they do have a DeLorean too. I'm like, where am I going to put 2 18-inch cars? Like, where am I going to put all these fucking dope
dude,
cars?
The next one I have to do is the Walker, the AT-AT. It's like 2 feet tall. I don't know what part of the reason I haven't put it together yet is because what the fuck am I going to do with it?
Where are you going to put this when it's done? Oh, it's crazy, man. I am super impressed with the quality of this Lego set. I'm enjoying doing it. I'm going to make it happen. Who knows? Maybe it's a new hobby. When I go on a trip, I take a big Lego set and I just knock it out.
So, and you know what, Nick, my buddy Nick Wari and I did, we got the 1989 Lego Batman, like the Lego Batmobile.
Yeah.
And during pandemic, we each had a set. I don't even think he was in this country. And we would do the set over Zoom. So we would kind of shoot the shit and kind of talk. But there was some quiet time where we were just building Legos together over Zoom, roughly on the same step. It was cool as hell.
Dude, dibs on our Lego celebrity Lego building TV show idea. Like not dibs to you, dibs to the world. Like
the
guys,
world. Yeah. Don't steal our idea.
Yeah. Don't steal our idea. Cause I love that idea. I think it's going to be so fun. So speaking of fun media, a fan of ours, a listener, I should say, a friend of the show, somebody I talked to on Instagram sent me his short film and wanted me to take a look.
Do it up, but so, keep introing it.
All right. So our friend, the Evil Dead Lee, he lives in Japan. My man, Lee Murphy, in Japan. He sent me his short film called Fanatic, and he was like, hey, can you take a look at this? And if you take a look at it, can you talk about a podcast? Be brutally honest. And so
number one, Lee, not enough dicks getting hammered with nails. I think the first movie we were ever asked to watch and review had an actual dick getting nailed to a table. It was like a piercing that this guy had, and he just pulls out his cock, throws it on a table, and just drives a nail through it
that
without
movie
warning.
Was full of unexpected and like when I said graphic nudity,
mm-hmm.
that was graphic. When I see that on like a movie, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. That changed the definition of graphic nudity for me. Not
because the head of his dick was nailed to a table and he was like leaning back
in close up.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there were no dicks in Lee's movie.
So you didn't have that, Lee. I don't know if that's a pro or a con, but
it starts with this guy who obviously is like a Swifty level fan of this guy. What's his name? Tony Pex or something. And it's this buff musician who has these glorious pecs. Good casting, by the way. And his life is kind of meaningless outside of this fandom. And he's just so bummed that like, and he's like, I got the poster. I'm in the fan club. You know what? It's just like, you won't write back to me. Like, he's just, his life is miserable because of this fandom. And he's like, I'm going to hang myself. And of course the ceiling rips down and there's this great shot, actually very well shot, where he's standing on the stool, puts the noose around his neck, tries to jump. Ceiling comes down, debris everywhere. It's a fun sequence. And then he hears on the radio that his hero, his idol, is dead. Mr. Pex himself. And he's like, no. Oh, wait. I have a solution. And it shows him at the graveyard. He takes a flower and he looks over and he sees a shovel and he's like, oh, and it shows him digging. It's a great, it's literally the Evil Dead shot of the digging with the shovel. And you see the shadow of him dragging a corpse up the stairs. And then it ends with him singing the song to the dead body. And he's in bed with he's like cuddling this dead naked corpse from the chest up just to get your money's worth on those pecs. And he gives him this like nice little kiss on the cheek, and that's how it ends. And it cracked me up because like I was watching it, and I was like, "What is he digging up?"
Did he give you any context, or just here? Did Lee give you any context, or this is my film? Check it out.
Hey, bruv, can you check out my movie? I made it. You know, I just want to get it out there. And I was like, "Heck yeah! All right, I'm down." He's like, "It's 3 minutes." I was like, "Even better."
Yeah, it's a fun story to watch for a couple of minutes, and it is definitely. It's my favorite way to watch something is to have no context. It's just
no context.
Okay. That's how Rumi sent it to me. He literally said, this is from one of our fans. It's 3 minutes. And I was like, okay, that's all I knew.
And it was just like, I had no idea there was going to be a alluded necrophilia.
What was that movie? Necromantic? Was it Necromantic?
God, Necromantic that we watched on Shitty Movie Sunday. And it was one of those ones that was like, are we going to turn this off?
Yeah.
We're going to keep watching this. Necromantic is a video.
You better not hurt that bunny.
that's a video nasty of the worst flavor. That's a movie that, like, watching with other human beings is embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
you're
was
right.
That was one of the roughest films I think I've ever watched with a group of people. Brutal. Fanatic was great and not brutal. Fun, short, well-made, precise, to the point, and cracked me up. Made me watch it twice, back-to-back. When I was like, wait, now that I know he's going to dig up this corpse, I'm going to have to watch it again to see exactly what happens. So that cracked me up. Good job, man. The Leevil Dead on Instagram, and follow him there and then check out his YouTube. So hell yeah.
That was fun. Thank you, Lee. That was fun to check out.
And he's an OG fan too. Like, he's been coming since the beginning. So he didn't
jump on when we got popular, when we became like the next big thing.
No, he was the first person I was like, who's listening in Japan? He's like, oh, that's me. And I was like, holy shit, cool.
He raised his hands.
hi, me, this guy.
Yes, Japan in the back.
Konnichiwa. Fantastic though. Good stuff. St. Patty's Day, man. What'd you do? Do you anything fun?
Dude, so you know I teach kindergarten, and you know that a leprechaun visits our class every year.
Oh, Sammy's into it now. Tell your story.
This year was fucking insane. The kids were so excited. They bought it hook, line, and sinker. The tricks that I play on them. The long and the short of it is I have a little silicone leprechaun decoration that's about the size of my hand, and it sticks on my whiteboard, my big whiteboard in the front of the room. And I put that out the very first time the leprechaun comes and fucks shit up. And I'm like, where did that come from? Who's that? And then some kids think that is the leprechaun, and some kids think the leprechaun controls it. But whenever the leprechaun comes or does something, that thing either moves, disappears, or is in a new place. So I'll put it on the board and I'll pull the screen down to, like, you know, project a workbook page or something on there. And because, like, sleight of a hand in front of a 5-year-old is pretty easy.
Yeah,
I'll reach behind it, pull that shit down and hide it. Like, I'll put it in my pocket. Then when I pull the screen up, he's gone and they lose their goddamn minds. Then when he comes at lunch and messes some shit up, I put him back or in a new spot. What I'll end up doing is I'll put him in someone's math book or someone's folder. And I'm like, all right, guys, take out your blue folders. And then someone's got a leprechaun and they lose it. It is beautiful. And then I have footage of the leprechaun that I've spliced together of like a 5-second clip of just a shelf. And then I'll splice one or two frames of this ugly ass little leprechaun doll. It's like, you know, roughly, it's not even the size of my hand. Just two frames, just enough. Not a single 5 or 6-year-old is like, can we pause it on that frame so that we can study what the leprechaun looks like? They just watch it all the way through. Can we watch it again? I have a buddy from school, Pat Rooney, who does an amazing leprechaun impression. So he does the voices in those videos. And then we'll call them on St. Patrick's Day, calls my phone and threatens us that he's going to get his gold back. They will cry and tell him that they're going to try to trap him. He will say, bring it on. This year, they had like a discussion to the point where the kids are like, I don't want to set my trap up. Let's just give him his gold back. They were dealing like we're just friends with him. It was so fucking funny. I love it. They got so into it this year. So into it.
So Kate and I were like, so St. Patrick's Day is coming up. Are we going to do leprechaun shit? And we're like, fuck no, we're not doing leprechaun shit. That Friday, I'm coming home for the weekend. I've been in Boston for 3 weeks. I come home. I'm going to go pick Sammy up at school. I'm going to surprise her. I go to pick her up. Huge, huge, huge. And then all of a sudden, the leprechaun came. I'm like, what? He made a big mess. My toy was up there. My friend's toy was here. My backpack was spilled everywhere. And they sent us the video so we could see, because they're like, you're not going to understand what your kid's talking
about. Correct. Like, yeah.
They sent us the video. And basically during nap time, the teachers just trashed the room. Mm-hmm. And the kids woke up and went ballistic. And I was like, all right, Sammy, the next time that happens, I need you to do something for me. And she goes, what? I need you to go, lepra. God. And she did it with like flexing her muscles, screaming like Shatner, and I was just so proud of her. And then, but like for days, she'd be like, Daddy, leprechaun made a big mess. And I was like, okay, do you think the leprechaun might come to our house? I don't know. And he's like, oh,
she was
no.
Like, I didn't until now. Now I'm thinking.
Yeah, now I'm thinking about it. But like, we didn't really do anything on the day. But it was like, that was so impressionable. That really rocked her world. Like, and I was like, so is leprechaun, like, tell me about him. What does he look like? And she's like, I don't know. And it's like, is it an animal or a person? He a people. And I was like, yeah, okay. Is he a big people or a little people? And she was like, maybe little. And I was like, smaller than Rufio or tiny little Chihuahua? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, all right, we're getting somewhere. Getting her to think about this stuff is just so fun. And she was just like, blew her mind. Just like, holy shit.
It's so fun. And there's no reason for it. Like, I teach a little bit about Ireland and about the holiday of St. Patrick's Day, more what it's become than what it started as. But that's what I teach them. I just let them have juice boxes all morning.
and then you have them fight.
I don't make them fight. They do it by themselves. It's the same thing as real Irish people.
They're all juiced up. So Lee's Irish, by the way.
Of course, he lives in Japan.
My man. So on the day, we were driving around the golf cart, and Sammy and I are listening to traditional Irish music. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's all about oppression and fucking kicking the asses of the people who are living in your country that are ruling it. And it's funny because it's like, this is terrorist music by American standards. I love it, though. Come out your back, black and tans. I love that song. You know, it's all good shit, man. But it was funny because she and I were just like blasting it. We pull up to the grocery store and I'm like, 3 cheers for the IRA. And the lady in the golf cart next to me was like, Happy St. Patrick's Day. I was like, I guess so. Sorry.
I've had kids. I haven't had this year. Nobody was scared until the phone call. Then a little girl started to cry. But halfway through the phone call, she kind of got into it and then stopped crying, which is usually what happens. But I don't pull any punches. So like, I'll have a mom write to me and be like, Aaron is really, you know, getting a little upset about the leprechaun. And my response will be something like, yeah, he's really messing up this room. And she'll be like, yes, I know, but he's getting a little scared. And I'll say the same thing I say to the kids. I'll be like, well, the leprechaun's not doing anything scary. He's tricking us and doing pranks, but he hasn't hurt anybody or said anything mean. I'm not stopping this for your kid because your kid is scared. This is going to help your kid not be scared of everything. Last year, there was one kid who, when the leprechaun was in his math book, he like jumped back from his desk. And he was so scared, but like roller coaster scared. He loved it. He was laughing, but screaming. He was laughing, but running away. So, but he was so scared. He's a neighbor. He lives in the same neighborhood as me. His mom is like, he is like looking under his bed at night and everything. So I came up with this idea specifically for this kid. I wrote a document on my Microsoft Word about leprechaun rules as they applied to our classroom.
You didn't put it on a CD-ROM like from Leprechaun 3?
Yeah, Leprechaun 3, which I, yep. So I would show them. I went to like the leprechaun wiki page and I showed it to them. I was like, look, here's a website about leprechauns. I'll read it to you. Then I turned my computer back around, opened up the document that I wrote, and it was all specific things that my kids were worried about that I didn't want them to worry about. So like I would write, a leprechaun will always stay near its gold. So if you have leprechaun gold at your work, the leprechaun won't go to your house. It will only stay at your work because that's where the gold is. So then I'd look at the class and be like, oh, so he's not going to go to any of our houses because the gold is in the classroom. So it was like all these things. So it was a really good tool. And I could just add to it every year to be like, what are you afraid of? Okay, let me just tell you why that's okay. And put it as part of this fake wiki page because you don't know how the internet works. So the same kid who's scared from last year, I see him this year and I tell him, hey, all of the chairs in my room are knocked over today. And he stops and he goes, do you think it was a leprechaun? I was like, I do. Friday, which is the day that we celebrated in my classroom, I dress up all green, leprechaun hat, flashing green necktie. I come home. Kent had a leprechaun at his school, too. So he's telling me all about it. We decide we're getting sushi for dinner, you know, because it's almost St. Patrick's Day. So he goes, can we wear our leprechaun hats to the sushi place? I was like, fuck yeah, we can. So Kent and I put on leprechaun hats. Amanda doesn't have one, so she just comes with us. We go in the car as we start. And she, like, at no point does she try to like talk us out of it because she knows. We are driving towards the sushi place with our leprechaun hats on. And what family do we see walking up the street? This kid who's like afraid of the leprechaun. So I go to Kent. Kent, when I roll this window down, just yell leprechaun stuff. We roll the window down and we drive by leprechaun, this kid's family. Patty's Day. Just kept on driving. What are the chances that like we'll have those hats on and see that kid, I was like, we gotta yell.
When I first got my Freddy Krueger costume with the full mask and everything, we would just drive around Burbank and I'd lean out the window and just yell at people in Freddy Krueger and be like, drive safe, put your seatbelt on. And people would just always be like, what the fuck? It's a school night. What are you doing out? And like, it was just my favorite. They just yell at people from the
awesome
street.
Yeah, with any luck, you so fuck up their night, you know?
Yeah, a little bit. We were in a shitty part of Georgia, go figure, filming a Walking Dead thing. And our van driver, we're driving out and he just rolls down the window and there's a man walking his dog and he leans down and goes, hey, Carol. And the guy turned around, stared at him and then waved. And I was like, do you know that guy? He's like, no. In these neighborhoods, though, I love playing hey, Carol. I'm like, what is this? He's like, I just roll out the window. And I scream, oh, hey, Carol. And I wave at them. And sometimes they wave back. And sometimes they give you a great mean face. But most of the time, they wave back. And it just became a game that we would play out there where you just see somebody be like, oh, hey, Carol. And they were just like,
guys or girls?
Didn't matter. Yeah. It was always just hey, Carol. Hey, Carol. And you wave at them. And most people are like, I'm not Carol, but they're going to slowly raise their hand and wave back because they're not going to not wave back.
Yeah.
It's the best.
That guy, like, you know when you immediately know you found a person who's part of your tribe where you're like, I can hang with that guy.
Yeah.
You talk about this driver. I'd invite him over my house sight unseen without knowing him. I'd be like, you can come over. You made the cut, bro.
This is like, oh, he was a funny guy. So he flew out to LA to work on a show where he was driving a pass van there. And then he was put in charge of driving the actress around who was the star of the movie. And then he married her.
Nice. Who is she?
I don't know. I don't know the rest of the story. But somebody was like, hey, you know, Kenya went out to L.A. and was like driving out there. And then he became like a personal driver for one of the stars. And I was like, no. Well, he did. And then he ended up marrying her. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great story.
I like to think that it was like a Lifetime movie. And she was like some stuck up bitch who was like, ugh, my driver is not going to be here on time. My driver. And he was just this nice guy. And she fell in love with him over Hey Carol. Now they have like a whole family that Hey Carols. You know, it's got to be like a family game where like when they go to the mall or something, whoever, like each person in the family has their own name. So he says Carol, she says Shauna, you know, the little boy says Timothy or whatever. And whoever gets that person, they get that point. So whoever yells it first and gets the wave, they get a point.
This has to have happened to you. Have you ever taken Kent to a playground and he's run into people he knows?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's super weird because so Sammy's like, it's Benny. And Benny's like, oh, hey, it's Sammy. And now there's two adults staring at you like, and you're like, I think they go to school. Like now you have to guess where they know each other from.
Yeah.
If it's actually like, do they actually know each other? Because kids will just be friends with anybody no matter what. Sure. It's a beautiful thing of children. And it's like, I think they go to school together. And they're like, Oxford. And it's like, yeah, that's cool.
What
and
school do you go to? Nope, that's not it.
That's not
you
it.
Go to how swim do lessons?
Yeah.
I don't know how our kids know each other. Is your kid's name Benny?
How about
I don't
gymnastics
know how they know each other then.
Yeah. Do you go to music class? Gymnastics?
Have
you
I hope that kid's name wasn't Benny. She was just caroling him.
Have you ever met her with a cute redhead? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's your wife. Okay.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, you got it. But it's like, it's so funny when you just have now this awkward standoff with parents. You're like, hey, our kids know each other. I guess we'll be friends now.
Amanda took him to the park the other day and she was like, it was your school's day at the park. She's like, I met three or four people who were like, does your husband work at LeMay? She was like, yeah. And then Amanda was trying to explain to me who these people were. It was like listening to a drunk person. Like, oh. It was the brother-in-law of this. She's like, I think it was like a grandma. It wasn't like the next day I met who it was. She was like, oh, I met your wife. I was like, you're the person that she was trying to explain? Holy shit.
Ooh.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, Carol. Oh, you guys should,
the
you guys
cadence
should try
of that is really good too.
Yeah. But he said the key is you got to be far enough away. If you're too close, you're too close, they might get scared. You have to be far enough away that they're a little scared, but there's enough distance between you. Because he's like,
in danger.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's like, if you talk to a stranger too close, they get, you know, people can act real crazy. But like, if you have enough distance, they're like, well, he's not close to me, so I'm going to wave back. Weird human behavior. That same day, the same day I learned about Hey Carol, I was was on set. It was an awful day, full of rain delays and lightning. And then we came back from a lightning delay and a bunch of sheriff cars rolled up. And they're like, guys, we need you all get in vans and go to a safe place right now. And they were like, whoa, what's going on? And they're like, there's a bank robbery in progress. And we're like, where?
Nice.
Right over there. You see that bank? That bank's being robbed right now. And it's like, oh, within walking distance, a stone's throw from our set. And they're like, we think they're going to come here because we're at an abandoned warehouse location. So a great nice. Place to hide. So we all pile in buses and we drive out and we're hanging out at this, like, I don't know, high school cafeteria for hours while this situation unfolds. And we're watching Twitter and the neighborhood sold these dudes out. They're like, oh, Bill and Carl robbed the bank. They've been talking about it for years. I bet they're running to hide at the abandoned factory because that's where they always said they were going to go. Sure enough, they went to the abandoned factory. The cops picked them right up. But like these guys must have been like, you got two beers in them. They'd be like, one day I'm going to rob the bank. Then nobody's going to stop us.
And then what are you going to do?
Sure thing. Even if you got the money, where would you go? I mean, there's that abandoned warehouse right here. I'll just run over there. We can hide it in one of the pipes. It's like,
I just talked with a friend today about times where I had what would be a killer joke, but knew I couldn't say it because of the professionalism or seriousness of a situation surrounding me. But a killer joke, I can't think of a better example of being in the back of a sheriff's car while working on a zombie show and being told that there's a bank robbery across the street and the robbers are most likely going to come into my zombie location, because I would need to say, hear me out. Can we help you catch them by flushing them out with zombie actors?
Yeah.
Because how great would that be? Like, I'm just assuming they're like goons from like a Captain America serial from the 50s. Hey, this is quite the haul, Butch. That's right, Harry. Let's count the loot. Wait a minute. Did you hear that? No, I'm not going to go and investigate. Come with me. That's why I'm the brains of this outfit. Oh,
brains!
Man.
Brains!
Zombies! And I wouldn't want to get in trouble. I wouldn't want to look stupid in front of my coworkers for making a joke to a cop at a time like that. But, oh, man, like if the cop smirked, victory. If the cop suited up a couple of us in zombie makeup and hit us in crates around the abandoned warehouse, like, man, what a great day that would be.
There were already dead body dummies all over this place. So yeah. I bet the bad guys showed up and were like, oh, my God. So I've seen the face on a cop when they see this happen. When I was filming my zombie movie in college, we were out in the like wastelands of outer Boston, rural outer Massachusetts, in the wetlands, filming in an abandoned farmhouse that we had full permission to be at.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we're filming and somebody's like, Aaron, there's like vans here and cops are getting out. I'm like, oh no. And this cop comes in and his big muscle cop and all these kids covered in zombie makeup, their eyes drooping down their face, blood everywhere, dead bodies. Just there's 100 of us. We had 100 extras all done up in zombie makeup. And the main guy couldn't give a shit. His muscle looked scared fuckless. He was like, and that I was like, oh God, just like when I need a moment, just like scared cop number two is my favorite, one of my favorite memories in life. Because this other guy's like, hey, we thought you guys were having a, this isn't going to be a Boston accent, by the way. Hey, you guys are going to have a, we thought you were having a rave and we thought we were going to have to like pick up like 10 or 20 of you. There's like 100 of you out here, except Boston, of course. And scared cop number two is just the best though, because he's just huge. And he's like, oh, everywhere he looked was just terrified.
Love it. I also love the alternate reality where the cops pull up to a bank robbery.
Yes.
And the bank, there's a shootout. There's the cops end up vanquishing or capturing the robbers. And they're like, all right, you got us. You could take us to jail now. And the cops are like, no, there is a zombie outbreak right across the street. So it's essentially the cops having the same conversation they had with you, but instead with bank robbers, and they're holed up in the bank because the zombies are invading towards the bank.
Dibs on this movie.
Yeah, that's a good movie right
there. That's a good movie right there.
It's very similar. I mean, oh yeah, it's Shadows of Dusk Till Dawn, but yeah, that would be cool. A whole bank, cops and robbers hold up in a location. Don't steal our idea, Quentin Tarantino. And
I mean,
please.
I'm stealing your idea right now, Matt. You want a story credit? All right, I can steal it.
As long as I can play Handsome Cop number one. I don't care if in the context of the movie I know what's going on or not. That's fine. I only want one line. Hey, Carol.
I'll give you two. You get hey, Carol, and z-z-z-z-z-z-z.
Yeah, I need that. But it needs to be played straight. Like, I don't want to hear zoink when I run away. It's straight in the movie. My character believes in what I'm saying. I'm sorry. I cannot get the idea, like, situation out of my head where a cop is like, there's this robbers over there and they might be coming here. I'd be like, we can at least leave the dead bodies, right? Can we set up a camera before we go? Like, I need to be involved in this more than you're allowing me to be.
Guys, we have the greatest prank set up ever. And you're going
to hear me out. One of my extras lays in the middle of those dead bodies and they let them start counting the loot and then starts to get up. You guys wait outside.
Okay, you can put him in a bulletproof vest, but that's about as far as we can get. So funny, man. Oh, that is good. Oh. So yeah, Godzilla won an Oscar.
Yeah, that's pretty. John Carpenter, I don't know if it's real, but I saw John Carpenter on X or something like that being like, Godzilla just won an Oscar in my lifetime. And I remember being like, that's pretty fucking cool. Like, it's what an intro, like, what a fun thing, like a fun life. Like, what, how great that life is, such that Godzilla won an Oscar. You know what I mean? A character and a franchise and a beast, the design that me and you have loved for 40 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It was amazing. I'm watching the Oscars at Legal Seafoods and they normally have sports on, but I was like, can you put the Oscars on? They're like, yep, Godzilla wins. And
wait, can you say yup in a Boston accent?
Yep. Park the car, have a yard.
Yeah, yup in a yard. All right.
Yep, yep. Freaking Godzilla wins. And I go, yeah. Like, they must have thought the greatest hockey score ever happened. Nope, my man, Big G, Gojira himself, walking home with a gold statue. I, like, the only reason I watched it was to see if he would win. I didn't, like, mm-hmm. I don't give a shit about any of the other, like, I don't really care. But I was really, really stoked for Godzilla, because that, it's funny because it's like, why don't you care about the other ones? I'm like, because it doesn't matter. And like, so then Godzilla doesn't really matter either. I'm like, I know, but it matters to me that Godzilla won.
Well, it's crazy to think that franchise with
possible,
what, like 30 something, 40 something movies,
38 movies in total, including all the legendary ones.
So like that, all, you know, spanning all of that stuff. I was just talking to my cousin Paul and he was asking about like what the best King Kong and Godzilla movies. And then he said he's having trouble getting into the Showa era because he didn't grow up with guys in suits. And he's like, it just looks so cheesy. And I was like, I know, that's why we love that.
How old is he?
24, 25.
Oh, damn. Less. See, that's when I started getting into that shit. Because, like, I watched it as a kid and I enjoyed it, but I didn't really get into it until I started to appreciate camp more.
Sure. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, when I really got an appreciation for, like, if you're good and cheesy, I'm so on board. That wasn't until I was in my 20s.
I think camp is probably, and like, we should probably do an episode about this, maybe with him, but like, I think camp and some of that stuff is relative. So like, you and I think of Showa era Godzilla as camp. He probably has his own definition or his own. I don't know if Godzilla would be my specific definition of it, but it's a great example. And I think there's something that we can love nostalgically as that like, he doesn't have that same thing for, because
that's my level,
with.
Though. That's my level. Like, Godzilla Showa era, Gamera Showa era is tough because that's even cheesier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then
yeah.
Like, below that for me is Troma.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I think,
and
that's probably true.
I have a tough time with Troma because it's literally like, hey, we suck. And you're like, I get it. Yeah, I get it. Whereas Godzilla never winks at me when he sucks. It's just fun.
And that's actually part of the whole kaiju experience, or at least where it came from, because, you know, arguably Godzilla 1 isn't really the first Godzilla to me. Maybe the second one is not really a kaiju movie because it's not exploitive in that manner. It's really trying to tell a story. Mm-hmm. Then you get to the third one, which was King Kong versus Godzilla, or Godzilla versus King Kong, I guess. And it's like, that's for fun, man. We're here to have fun. And it's...
Yeah.
By we're trying to make a good movie. We're not trying to make a shitty movie. We're trying to make a good movie. But what's the movie about? How are we going about making it? We're just along for a fun ride, you know?
Yeah. By the third one, they're like, fuck it. We have $20 in a plot. So we're going to
Japan was like, are we finished with our Hiroshima, you know, atomic bomb analogies? Are we done? Did we get that out of our system? Okay. Can we just have fun with this concept now?
Yeah. And they're like, 38 movies, go.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's so cool is like the Showa era is full of this like great cheesiness that I don't know, I find so endearing. Even the bad ones are super endearing.
Yeah.
You know, all the short shorts, all the cartoonists, all the stupid alien plots.
Journalism.
I love it. Yeah. It's so bad, it's good. That to me is a great example of it. But then when you start getting to the Heisei and the Millennium era, it's just cool to see what you've done with the genre. Because they're like, wait, we can do better. Let's show you technological advances. And by the time for me,
and also in storytelling too.
Yes,
you know,
it's good,
which I think is amazing. And I guess it's fun because even though Showa era was like 60s, 70s, which is literally before our time, we still grew up with that era before Heisei really got started. Yeah. So even though we were born in a good time frame to grow up with this franchise, and we got to see it in different stages of development. Like Showa era was just, you know, the first movie. Showa era was just for fun. Then Heisei and Millennial starts to be more. We're building here. We're mythos building. We're world building. We're character building. Some of the same humans are in different.
But only mythos building for the first, third, 11th, 17th.
Sure. Yeah.
Film.
Yeah.
All the ones in between. Yeah. And then
37. It's not world building. It's 38 individual worlds getting built. But like, then, great, man.
And then the very next movie is like, I'm going to take the first movie and then time travel back to the second movie, retcon that. Oh, Godzilla, I love you so much. I am just so pumped.
And Godzuki.
Oh, and Sammy and I, she loves Baby Godzilla, and I got her like a little Godzilla like vinyl figure, and it's like cartoony. She likes that. And so today Mondo just released the Godzilla, Manila, and
I saw that. Is the Mezco?
King Caesar.
Yeah.
No, it's I don't think it's Mezco. I think is it Mezco? But it's Mondo. Mondo did it.
Oh.
Tap Peter designed it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I want to get that for Sammy so bad. It's so good. And the box is an artwork in itself. $250.
I don't love my daughter that much yet.
I mean, she is not responsible enough to play with $250 toys fair. Yet.
Can't I hear Kent? Even through my headphones, I can hear Kent in the other room yelling now, and Godzuki. We've watched those old Marvel cartoons together.
That's so funny, man. Fucking good. Oh, so yeah, congrats to Godzilla and all that shit.
What a time to be alive.
What a time.
I don't know who won Best Picture. I literally don't know who won anything else except Godzilla.
Oh, man.
I didn't watch it at all.
I watched it and I can't even tell you who won Best Picture because I didn't care. Holy shit. I don't even remember who won Best Picture.
I think it was Godzilla versus Mothra.
It should have been. I don't even remember. It wasn't Poor Things, which was my choice. It wasn't Barbie. It was Oppenheimer. It was definitely Oppenheimer. All right.
The one movie that we've continuously panned on this show as being too good to care about.
Too good to give a shit. You know where I saw
it? Well, obviously it's going to be good.
I watched it on an airplane on the tiniest screen possible. That seemed appropriate for me. What a piece of shit.
Anytime I watch something on a small screen, I just pretend like I'm at a drive-in and I'm sitting far away.
I love watching movies on planes, man. I watched the third Guardian of the Galaxy movie the other day on a plane. It was great.
I refuse. I mean, if it's a movie I don't care about, or it can't be a visual movie, not superhero, not Godzilla, not spaceships, not bombs. Not
I also watched Adam Driver Kills Dinosaurs movie.
I'd watch that maybe because I don't care.
It was good. It was, I mean,
you're the only person I've heard say that. I haven't heard most people say anything about it, but I've heard bad things.
I mean, when you're on a plane watching it on a tiny ass screen and you're just like, man, that guy's fucking up dinosaurs. Cool. It's the version of Jurassic Park at this point I want to see.
Yeah.
He lures like some sort of T-Rex spinoff into a giant hot geyser and it melts the dinosaur's face. Fucking cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And does that dinosaur survive and become Scar from Land Before Time?
I hope
so. Same universe?
Yeah, it could be. It easily could be. I thought that movie was actually pretty entertaining. I mean, it's dumb. It makes no sense. But at the end of the day,
I don't need a movie not to be dumb. I'm okay with that.
He lands on a planet, has a machine gun, and dinosaurs attack. I'm sold. I'm happy. I would read
a card series about that.
I know, right? I'm beyond happy. It was great. I guess it's time to wrap it up. I don't want to.
Seamless.
I took a breath.
I just wrote Aaron a message on Zoom. It was like, wrap it up, ? And he's
all right, bye. Blast off click. Recording.
Before we used to have a whole bunch of nonverbal cues that we would use with each other when we were on Zoom or something with each other, like a video call with each other before we did YouTube, so that we could ask each other questions and wrap it up. Kind of look like stupid, like Neanderthal sign language, but we always knew what each other was talking
about. You thought we were stupid Neanderthals? I thought we were like cool Delta Team 6
guys.
Yeah. Like,
go. Rumi, cover me. I'm going into a story.
Wrap it up. Your story's going too long, Matt. This has been good. Guys, what are you excited for? Are you pumped that Godzilla won an Oscar? Are you disappointed with any other movies that won? Or are you bummed with some snubs? I don't give a.
Do you remember who won Best Picture?
I couldn't remember till it was Opp and Flopper.
If anyone else won that was taller than a building, I would commit it to memory.
Oppenheimer did kind of cause Godzilla.
I was gonna make a radioactive joke too. I was trying to think of how to work that in.
It's the prequel to Godzilla. When you think about that, it's just a disappointing Godzilla movie. Actually, most movies are just disappointing Godzilla movies when you realize. I was so bummed when I watched that movie about the. Never mind. I'm going to cut that out. There was a joke in there about it just being depressing that there was no Godzilla.
Bleep the
I mean, sometimes, like you said, you try a joke and it fails miserably. Sometimes you try a joke and it hits.
But it's different when you're like, hey, sheriff's deputy, look how cute and funny I think I am. Or you're like, hey, how funny I think I am.
Well, that joke
you're gonna love it.
That joke wasn't funny at all for all those who we cut that joke out for. Not funny at all. Oh my God, I think I threw up a little bit. Oh, yep, not.
Some stuff is just for the Rocketeers.
That's why that's why we're still friends, man. Oh.
I know, it really is. Oh, God.
Anyway, there's only one thing left for us to do. Plug our socials.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to follow us on Face Twitter and Face Instagram and Twitter bot. And you do it better than me.
Facebook, Instagram, and X at Launchpad Pod, and our website, launchpadpod.com. Check me out Saturdays, Half Hour of Horror with Aaron McClain, and On Block Horror. Check that shit out. That's fun. Coming in next year, check out Dead City Season 2. I'm plugging it early, guys, because I'm working on that shit.
Now with 10% more bank robberies.
I hope so. In my mind, it's like the fucking town. With Jeremy Renren and our boy, Affleck the Bomb.
Oh, yeah. It's like that, but also zombies.
But zombies, yes. That's what I'm hoping for. Ugh. Let's blast this thing off, buddy. Friendship, the best medicine. You feeling better?
I do. Yeah, I do. I'm going to feel like I'm sweating and I feel like out of it. Like I feel shaky headed. I feel like I was way funnier than I thought I was going to be. And I'm going to turn this machine off. I'm going to send you the information and the files that I normally send you. And then I'm going to go out there and go, to Amanda, oh, I feel like shit now. I shouldn't have done that. She's going to be like, I told you not to do it. Well, she didn't actually. She said I could and should do it. Mm-hmm. Best medicine. I'll be paying for the rest of the night, but that was good.
One more thing. Thanks to everybody. Thanks, Lee, for sending us your short. If you guys have a short, let's keep it around 3 to 5 minutes, of course. If you have a short, if you have a movie, send it to us. We'll take a look. We'll talk about it on air. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we'd love to do that. And maybe we'll do like bingo cards where we'll say like, if yours includes a bluefish, a corn dog... or a nail hammer. Clipping a nail. I was going to say a nail through a dick.
We're going to pigeonhole us with the types of films we get.
Hashtag. That's not a big hashtag. If you hashtag dick hammering. Oh God.
Oh, ungovernable force. What a movie that was. Congrats. Anyway, we're the Rocketeers and we are
ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.